It's Camilla from Menswear by Woman podcast. Welcome to another episode. Right, today's episode, his menswear is absolutely beautifully done, but it's also it's a clothing brand which works on the authentic utility. They say they developed it to be tested for its durability, worn for its comfort and cherished over time. Brand is called, let me tell you what the brand's called first. It's called Works and Days. Absolutely beautiful stuff, a beautiful garment. I'm going to talk to the founder, Raf Godfrey. Hi Raf, how are you? You okay? Welcome to Menswear by Woman podcast, by the way.
Hi Samantha, great to be here. And thank you for having me on.
Lovely brand. Absolutely lovely brand. It's I love what you're doing. It's a very new brand as well. It's quite young. So what made you want to go into having your own brand, and did you always wanted to do this?
I guess it's a bit of a story like quite a few people during COVID, and it's not my first, although the brand is new, it's not my first time doing this. I started the brand in 2022, but I've been working in menswear for the past 10 years.
Right,
at Paul Smith originally, and then at Norse Projects more recently, where I've been the head of design there. But like many people, I think during COVID, we had some time to think and reflect over where we wanted to be and what we really wanted to do, and kind of have that, wondering what is it that I really want to do, and having that realization, if there was no obstacle, I would love to do my own brand. And eventually I sort of narrowed down all of the things that were holding me back. And did you have enough knowledge to do this? Did you know the people to make the garments you kind of wanted to? Do you have a creative idea that you wanted to explore for it? And I was kind of going, yes, yes, yes. And then you kind of come, do I have the money to do it? And you're like, maybe not, but maybe I'll figure it out some one way or another. You kind of like, that's not really a reason to not do it. And then the main reason is like, am I frightened? Am I scared to fail? And I think that was one of the big things not letting me move forward with it. Right. And eventually you're like, well, I can't let fear of failure stop me from really pursuing the one thing that I really want to do.
Starting the brand up, was it quite difficult actually? Just, you know, when you're working full time and you're working for someone else, you're getting a wage coming through and all that stuff. It's always a huge step from comfort zone to the uncomfort zone.
Absolutely. And it's really the start of the brand still, and I'm having to find every way to keep making it work. So I still actually continue to work for other people, doing some consultancy and having some freelance projects that make sure that I can keep the brand going and longevity wise while I build up the customer base and while I develop the collection. It was important that I didn't just go from full-time job to
nothing,
full-time brand. I just think it's impossible unless you have infinite resources.
Starting the brand up, right? Starting like getting pattern cutters, getting machinists, getting factories, finding the fabrics, getting the design side is probably as you're a designer yourself, it's the easy part. I say this because when you're doing the research and all that stuff, of course it's difficult. But actually getting to the point of developing, was that difficult?
Yes and no. I mean, the great benefit of working for slightly smaller or mid-sized companies, like what I'd done with the Norse Projects, is that I'd been able to see the kind of how the whole supply chain worked and really been quite having very close relationships with the manufacturers we were visiting, that we were making connections, that we could work very closely developing the products. And so when it came to doing my own thing, I had a lot of connections and people that I could start relationships with and develop the clothes with them at a factory level.
Right.
So with the pattern cutting, my process for designing is based mostly on vintage samples, things that I've collected over time. Military history has always been one of my big, big passions, you know, and loves of menswear is the weirdness and the oddness and the specialness that comes from old vintage samples, or not so old vintage samples, things that you can collect that have something unique about them. And that's really where I start with. So I'll take the vintage samples and work with the passing cutters at the factory to develop the styles. So it's something that, because I had the background that I did, the development of the collections and the styles and the fabric and everything was all quite easy to fall into place. It's everything else that comes with starting the business, where it's trying to get on the very steep trajectory to figure out how to do invoicing, to how to organize your warehouse, on how to get the wholesale connections and build up trust with suppliers and build up relationships that are just totally outside a designer's area of expertise. So the design and product development was kind of like, I can do this. This is no problem. This is like, I have a super clear vision how to do this. Everything else was kind of the chaotic part that I'm still really, really trying to figure out, but that's also part of the joy of it.
So how do you go about designing the range?
I try to keep it really, really tight. I mean, you outlined a bit about the purpose of the garments at the start and the utility, but really trying to build pieces that stand the test of time. But it's more about, you know, having one piece that fulfills the role of three. It's about having a focus on durability and utility, but that kind of has to have quite a tangible meaning. And I really always try and make sure that I'm combining the heritage of the vintage pieces that I start from with the technical fabrics, and then combining it with the longevity. There's kind of three touch points that I'm having to make sure it fulfills. And each piece I try to develop so that it's very well thought through from inside to outside. And that is I'm thinking what we all love about menswear, that all the small details are thought of, but I'm trying to develop those silhouettes and then introduce new fabric programs. So it's really about, I have my two-way stretch program. It comes in four different styles, and you can get to know the kind of the PT pant, which is the physical training pant, through that fabric.
Yeah.
But then in the winter, I developed a new fabric, which is a technical polywool, the TPW, which will come in for autumn winter 24. And that's just a whole new texture and feel, but with the same base fit. So I'm really trying to build on styles that I have developed over time.
And is that what you're, with the brand, is that what you're also doing, like developing fabrics?
I'm not developing fabrics, because the scale that I'm at is just not possible. But what I'm trying to do is work with fabrics that have possessed the qualities that I'm looking for, and I'm trying to treat them in a way that is unusual for technical fabrics. So, for example, I love the performance of technical fabrics, and that's a little bit my past of working with working on more technical clothes, working with Gore-Tex, working with not pure sportswear that's always designed for a more urban setting, but they tend to be a little bit flat, a lot of the technical fabrics, and lack a bit of life and things that I generally love about more traditional clothes, which have this wrinkled texture, that have this lived in life. And what I'm doing with Works and Days is take the shirts that I make. I try to make sure that we're constructing them in a more traditional way, no fusings, no glue, only stitching, loose interlinings, a very traditional way of making shirts, but with very technical fabrics that perform like any sportswear product. Right. But on the look, it's very casual. The fit is very military. The construction is there because it's kind of bulletproof. And the fabrics are then, I'm taking something that's traditionally technical and I'm washing it a lot of the time. So using different wash houses to get a kind of lived in feel and look and permanent wrinkle to these technical fabrics. That's really how I'm trying to develop the textiles.
Yes, because some of your fabrics, and I'm just looking at them, they have that wrinkle as well. And some of them are quite, and they're, And it's quite technical as well. So, well, you know, with menswear, it has, I mean, I love details. I mean, I'm very into details, the functionality, technical side of it. It always, it's literally like being an engineer. And it's like also like architecture when you're actually designing with to the point with the details, you know. And I always find that fascinating with menswear. And your brand seems to be doing that as well. Is that something that you've always been interested in?
Yeah, I mean, I love the word detail in that context. It's but like from everything, I love being like it's the tiny buttons to the thread to exactly. Like knowing where every single piece comes from. Exactly. It's almost like being a little conductor of each garment. It's trying to arrange every specific manufacturer, trim manufacturer, fabric manufacturer, garment supplier, the logistics people you work with. And the great thing that I really love about running your own brand is that you get to put every piece together yourself in a detailed way that makes sure things come out exactly the way you intend. So detail is the right word, and a little bit obsessive over the small details.
Yeah.
And that kind of engineering and getting really into knowing I love knowing how the chemical properties of polyester make it happen. That's like fun to me, watching how polyester is made on
It's just so weird how you say that, because it's exactly like what I love as well with menswear. It could be the smallest detail, right, in the whole of that garment that kind of excites you about it, you know. It could be the smallest, I don't know, a different type of buttonhole, and that's like, wow, that is amazing. And nobody understands that but yourself. You know, it's like those small little details makes that garment. And that's what I think.
Yeah, I hope it's not just us that love that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or a customer that someone at some point notices that tiny buttonhole and go, oh, that's pretty nice, actually.
Can you imagine having this whole conversation about that small little buttonhole like for an hour or two, you know? Anyway, where did the name come from, and why are you calling it Works and Days?
It's actually it's an old Greek poem by Hesiod, and it's kind of like a farming manual in a way that then gets translated into a story of the origin of the gods. But the message for me was, it's really one man working hard over time to develop something carefully, talking to his brother, who is kind of flippant and wasteful and spending his money and using his resources, and ending up all the time coming back to his brother, who has taken the time and care to tend the farm and work on things properly. And it's that message of doing things properly over time that I really liked, and is a kind of underlying philosophy for the brand.
What's the best part of doing your own brand and not working for anyone full time? I know you're doing freelance work. I have to say that very quickly.
Yeah. I think the best thing about it is that once you've decided that having your own brand is something that you want to do, I think it's, you inevitably have this feeling that you want to build something that is not just the clothes. It's also, you hope to build a company where you'll have employees and a great working environment and a great supply chain, and you want to have a positive impact on the world by the way that you can run your business in the way that you see it. Also by providing products that customers will really love. And that's the other part. It's like, I hope that the products can be really cherished by people, you know, passed down, passed on, worn to death, really loved. And, you know, you have those garments in your closet that you keep coming back to and keep wearing and keep picking up. Like, that brings me so much joy. And if somebody gets that out of something I'm making with Works and Days, that's the ultimate goal and joy for me in doing it.
You're working with sustainable fabrics a lot. Quite a lot, in a sense, because it on the about section it says it. And How do you find it with menswear in working with sustainable fabrics?
Yeah, I think it's difficult. It's not also the it's not the primary focus for Works and Days, but it's trying. I'm trying to embed it just in the background of everything I do.
Yeah.
But there are some fabrics I use that I guess really aren't on the forefront of sustainability, but I really have to come back to the ensuring the reliability of the garments and the ideas of responsible shopping, encouraging consumers to view their clothing as investment pieces, and then designing things. I think I mentioned earlier as one garment that can function as three kind of things. So I just really want that to be so useful in that word utility as well. They should be really utilitarian, so useful, so durable that that's the kind of sustainability that I'm really focused on. But at the same time with the materials, for example, I was using Vental Organic, some of the synthetics I use are bio-based polyesters or biodegradable. But the more I'm looking to the future, I would love to be able to find more technical, natural alternatives or innovative synthetics that are more sustainable. And I think that's the adaptability of the brand, that I hope to keep pushing innovative fibers that can be more sustainable in the future, but without losing focus on the garment must just be really good. The main focus is quality over quantity and not buzzwords of sustainability for me.
The classic codes and reworked. So is there, I need to know what the classic codes are and how it's reworked. I mean, I'm reading it, but I'd love to know for myself how that works.
It's something just for my personal design philosophy that's really important, that whatever garment I design or work on, I just think it has to have a familiarity and a reference to something that has existed, that the customer sees and instantly kind of has this familiarity that it looks like something they know, but has been changed and different. You know, I think that familiarity of something classic is really important, particularly for most men, most consumers. And I would love to just, you can ease people out of their comfort zone by feeling kind of classic. A quick example of the basic chino that I make that will come next season. It's almost a reproduction of a 50s military chino.
Right, okay. Wow.
Very classic, but the fabric is a cotton spun with corduroy yarn. So it's a cotton cordura blend.
Wow.
So super light but durable and kind of crispy and rich, made in Japan. Also with a draw cord in the waistband, so you can avoid having a belt. Nice detail. You can wear a bit oversized if you want. You can just make it a bit more flexible. But on the surface, it looks like a pretty classic chino, super accessible for anybody. But you know, as you just go deeper down the levels, you've just got a few changes that just make it something special and new. And I think that for me is that kind of classic codes reworked.
So, Ralph, developing the brand and coming out with the brand and all that stuff, when you first came up with a brand and showing it to the world, that must have been quite difficult, right? Because getting the photo shoot, getting the website ready, going out there telling people, I've got a brand. Is that difficult? Or was it quite straightforward for yourself?
I think it's easy in a practical sense. Like, there is work that you need to do, photo shoots. Sales tools, putting all of that stuff. The hard part is that the market is just so saturated with brands, with products, and with lots of stuff that also is not very good. But the difficult thing is just the kind of the fact that most people don't care when you first come out with something, and that's, I guess, a little hard when you're putting everything into a new project.
Yeah.
But how would people know that what you're doing is something to pay attention to? How would anyone know that the new brand you're coming out with is different to any of the other brands that might not be so good coming out there. So at first, I think it's very difficult to kind of deal with the level of apathy that you're faced with when you first go, here's my new thing, isn't it great? And then it's like, ah, kind of a collective sigh. So the hard part is getting past that initial stage and going like, look no, at I've it. Got to keep going. Yeah. I'm going to keep showing you that it's
like, or the other thing is, look at my brand. Look at it. This is what I've got, you know?
Yeah.
How do you get, I mean, I always think it's quite difficult to get people to recognize who, I mean, okay, you go to trade shows, right? But trade shows are expensive. You know, they are expensive things to be showing. And the back in the days, they used to say, if the buyer seen you, if you're at a trade show, right, and if you've actually been there for six seasons, then the buyer will look at you. Nowadays, you don't really need that, do you? Because you've got social media. Because social media, you're going directly to your customers. And there's one thing about the digital age is like it's much more, is it much more easier? But I also think it is yeah. much harder as well, because there's so many on the digital world, don't you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. And in some way, it's, I think, gone full circle that
yeah.
social media made it so much easier for people to go directly to the stores, to get directly in contact with the yeah. buyers. And it does enable you to forge relationships with people. I've seen it. It's a super positive thing, like the ironically having that moment of like, oh, I'm like connecting with people I didn't know on social media, and it's really positive. And you go, oh, that's why it's called social media. That's why this is it's actually a good thing. But on the other hand, because there's so many people doing that, I think buyers, stores, people can't necessarily trust everybody that they're getting in contact with, and do need to become reliant again on those people who they can trust, whether it's an agent or a salesperson they've worked with before, or trade shows that are well established.
Yeah.
So I think it's almost come full circle that, again, you need to rely on people that you would trust and value their opinion to say, like, hey, look at this one. Actually, this out of the 20 brands that have contacted you today, this is the one that you should actually look at. I think it's important again. So pluses and minuses, but it's definitely can be really effective. Now, I've made some great contacts, good friends. I mean, that's how I got in contact with you. It's yeah, just exactly. through social media. You see someone who you think, oh, this person's doing something really cool. Well, I'm going to send them a message, and that goes a long way.
That was it. And I've actually done, this is how I've got hold of all my guests through social media, basically. So I can't really say bad things about social media. So it does, the only thing I would say a bad thing about it is being on it for such a long time. So, you know, and you forget that you have a life. Who's your favorite menswear brand out there at the moment?
I think while I was studying,
say the name of the university. Go on, Raf. It's all right. We can take it.
I'll get a bit of context before I answer this. I was studying in London.
You're not going to say the name of the
university. I ended up working part time at Margaret Howell.
Right. Well, you're not going to say the name of the university.
Oh yeah, I was studying at Central St Martins.
There you go,
which is a good background to have in this industry.
Yeah, I've got it, but my story is a different story, totally together. But no worries. But carry on. Yep.
But yes. Anyway, while I was working there, I started. I was working part time.
Right.
Ended up having the dream part-time student job, which was working at Margaret Howell,
yeah,
on cool. In a couple of their stores in Wigmore Street and
right, yeah.
Fulham Road. I can't remember now, but it was just honestly, it's just a great education being on the shop floor,
yeah.
Being around those clothes on a daily basis, understanding how they were making things and what the real quality of those garments was, and that had such a, I think, foundational influence for me while I was studying. And it's still one of my favorite brands, also just because they're so, I think, unwavering in their vision. It's such an outlier in the market that I think it's hugely commendable, the business they have and the beautiful products they make.
Her product actually is, I mean, it's very sophisticated, but it's also gives me this calmness of menswear. You know, this whole calmness. You know, it's so
during
calm.
The time I was working there, it was like really, like skinny was huge. Like skinny fit, slim jeans, everything was so big. And they just would not bow to that trend. And obviously it's come around totally to their fit and their style. But just
but that's the whole point, isn't it?
We're not doing this. This isn't us.
That's the whole point. I think sometimes with menswear, I think to me with menswear, you should never be in trend. I don't like the word anyway, trend. And when I design, I'm not looking for the trend. You know, it's something in menswear that it kind of puts me off. It's, you know, when labels are, if somebody says, oh, that label's very trendy, it's like, oh, it's following trends. I'm gone off it. Because I think a lot of menswear brands out there, they don't follow trends. Because, and that's the nicest thing about it, because you're not following trends, you're doing what you believe in, right? And what you are,
I think that's true
about.
Enough. Yeah, I think there's a lot of customers out there in the menswear market, particularly, that you know, they just look for something that really suits their lifestyle and their niche 100%. Community. And that's, I love that. I think that's partially what I'm trying to cater to, you know.
Sorry, so going back to your to your career, So you studied at St. Martin's, worked at Margaret Howe, and also you did design work at Paul Smith.
I was there for somewhere around 4 years.
Right. Okay.
Which was it was an amazing time. The job I originally had was working for part of their Japanese licensee, which was a company called Arnebold, which was a workwear company that Paul Smith had owned since maybe they'd had it going since the 80s or something, maybe not that early. But it had since become a Japan-only collection.
Right.
And what I didn't know at the time was that it was they were slowly winding that business down and trying to simplify the organization. And so they kind of needed someone to be there for the slow wind down of that business. But it gave me actually this, I didn't know at the time, I just thought, this is crazy. It gave me some responsibility. I got these like collections design. I'm going to Japan 4 times a year. Like incredible working across all these different products. And it just gave me this total playground to make all these mistakes and to learn so much and to just be exposed to Japanese fashion, to vintage stores over there that just was incredible. And it also, once I'd kind of done a good job doing that, they brought me on to the PS side of things in the global collections. So then I started working for the main company for another couple of years until I kind of decided that I wanted a bit of a change. But it was honestly just one of the best experiences for me. It gave me such a good foundation of understanding all different product categories and how things worked and organizing photo shoots and all of these things that you, I guess, typically wouldn't get access to if you did the traditional design assistant, junior designer, designer, senior designer kind of traditional path.
What's the hardest part of doing this brand?
That could be a long list.
Oh, is it? So pick the most hardest of that list, like the one on number one. On the top list,
The hardest, and this is gonna maybe sound obvious, is just getting more people to know about the brand, about what you're doing, and getting people to getting the clothes in front of people,
yeah.
because what I do doesn't necessarily translate super well to Instagram, because it's so much about the fabric and the kind of inside details. The fit is very important.
Yeah.
But on a photo, it's quite easy for the garments to just look quite classic. And it's only when you get up close, you feel it, you touch it, you wear it, and you live with it, that you kind of go, this is really something different that the brand has time to kind of stand out against others. So yeah. I really need to just slowly build awareness and get the brand in front of more people, bring on more wholesale accounts. That's the biggest challenge, is fighting against very loud brands in the market, like yeah. trying to get heard when there's a lot of people doing things that are trend-based or very loud, that stand out on Instagram. So I think that's the challenge for me, is telling the story in a captivating way that can quickly grab people's attention. That's yeah. something I have to continuously work on.
And is this, are you doing everything yourselves, like the social media, so you don't have anyone like a PR or, you know, people behind the brand trying to get it out?
No, there's certainly no one behind the brand. It's me. And nothing is a one-man show in a way. I can't take 100% credit for everything, because there's been so much support, help from friends who are also very talented, working with photographers that I know, design friends who've worked on the website, brand identity. And, you know, luckily when you're making great stuff, you can make kind of trades, and you can, if they love what you're doing and you love what they're doing, there's a way to find an agreement that isn't always financial, that is people working on good things together, that hopefully can bring something to both people's lives, businesses, that is not just a transactional nature. So you have to rely so much on your connections and friends to help you get things going.
So what's the next part? What's after the spring summer collection? And then
So spring summer 24 is being delivered now.
Okay.
I hope to get it on the website by the end of the month, maybe February, because I'll be in Paris next week for the Fashion Week. We've got a showroom with a couple of other brands there, so that's exciting. And seeing lots of people again, it's one of the funnest times of the season to meet the stores, to meet other people working in the industry, friends you haven't seen, contacts that you've met. It's just a great time to get together and show the new collections and be quite social and show what you've been working on and share together what's been going on. So it's an exciting period. And I think this is an important year for me and the brand to see where it can go in the next 6 months to a year, to try and really turn it into a business. Whereas at the moment it's the start of a brand. It's really the start of the journey. And now I have to start to really turn it into a business and the company that I think it can be.
So you've done the hardest part though, starting it.
Yeah, it's so funny. I think that decision, this decision to start it, is really the hardest thing.
Once
you've said, all right, I'm sending that email to start the brand to a supplier or whatever it is.
This is it.
And then you're just kind of like, it's work.
You know, this is it. It's like, wow, I've done it. I've started it. And, you know, a lot of people think like starting a brand is really easy. It's not. There's so much to it. There's so much involved in it. It's unbelievable how much there is. And it's not that easy as well, you know, just taking that first step, getting the designs done, getting them made, getting them, you know, to be seen by people, getting the orders. That's a lot to take on board. And people forget that, you know. So well done. Well done, Raf, for doing it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well done. So on that, if you weren't passionate about it, I don't think you would do it, would you?
No, definitely not. I honestly love what I do. Even when it's been working for other people, working for my own thing, I just love the industry, and I love menswear, I love clothes, I love fabrics. Just kind of like I'm obsessed with it, and I wouldn't be able to do it if that wasn't the case. And it's definitely so much of it is not, let's say, fun, but underlying everything is just so, there's so much fulfillment and general joy that I get out of it, if I didn't absolutely love it, I wouldn't do it. And I hope that that love comes through in all the garments that I make and what people end up wearing. And I think it does. So I just need more people to try it out and see if they feel that too.
And on that note, Raf, I would like to thank you for coming on to Menswear by Woman podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on board. And I think the passion and the love for it does come through on your brand. Absolutely beautiful products. And yeah, it's so clean, but it's also technical.
Thank you.
And they're very well designed. So great brand. So everyone, just to let you know, please have a look at Works and Days and have a look. You'd be quite shocked because how great the products are. So there's a lot of thought that's been taken in as well in designing it. So thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Raf, for coming on board. Thank you.
Thank you.